Boker Tov. Good morning. So let's review just where we have been for those who are returning, and for those new, we'll catch you up very quickly. Welcome. So this year we have journeyed through the arc of what we call the Masorah. And we spoke about the origins of the Masorah and the Torah Shebaal Peh and the tradition. And then, for the last several weeks, we've been talking about values that are part of our distinct Masorah, of our community, which is championed by great rabbinic figures, our community and our Masorah. It's been championed for generations and continues to be. And we talked about different underlying ideas, principles, themes, and then we're talking now about issues that reflect those themes. So we spoke about the idea of being nuanced, that the concept of nuance, rather than a black and white orientation, is something that characterizes our community. We talked about the idea of human initiative in the world. So we've talked about some different features that are unique to our community. And then we've spoken about specific areas in which these unique ideas, like the relationship between Kodesh and Chol, where the rubber meets the road, where it comes to fruition. So we spoke, for example, about the role of secular studies. You know, how does secular studies in our community, as part of a person's Avodas Hashem, how does that fit? And last week, we spoke about leisure and how a person's vacation time, or how they use their off time. There should be sheets coming around. There should be... Oh, they're not enough?
So I'll share.
It's weird. There should be... Sorry, I don't know why. There should be plenty. I made extra. All right. So today, we're going to talk about another example of an issue which reflects many of these ideas, and we're going to continue next week. So today, we're going to talk about religious Zionism, and then Emir Tzashem, next Sunday, we're going to talk about our attitude toward non-religious or non-observant Jews. So that's going to be the plan, because these are issues that reflect a particular perspective. So we're going to start now on the blue colored sheets. Let's start with the blue sheets with an introductory note. So years ago, in the 1950s, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik delivered a series of lectures as the honorary president of the Mizrahi in New York in a hotel. Rabbi Schwartz, shall him be well, described to me that he was there. He remembers going to hear Rav Soloveitchik's very important address at the Mizrahi conventions. And there's one particular essay which was originally published as a Yiddish volume called Fear Drashos, which was then expanded to 5, translated into Hebrew, became called Chamesh Drashot, and then Chamesh Drashot was translated into English, which is what you see in front of you, called the Rav Speaks. Now, this essay that we're going to focus on, I think, is an important observation, not just about the concept of religious Zionism, but the general idea that we are developing through this entire series in terms of creating an identity for our path, our Mahalach and Avodas Hashem. So Rav Soloveitchik describes the following in this section called Joseph and His Brothers. When the Mizrahi was founded in 5662, which we'll get to after this, the founders of our movement fulfilled, go out from your country, lech lecha me'artzecha, mimoladetecha umibeis avicha. Says Rav Soloveitchik something, there was a sociological phenomenon which happened, which is, you can use a lot of descriptions, challenging, difficult. He says, for he who joined the Mizrahi was virtually excluded from his birthplace and ostracized from his spiritual paternal home. We were lonely, As Yosef, as Joseph the dreamer, was lonely among his brothers who mocked him. Our brethren also suspected us of many sins and looked at us merachok, from afar. Turn the page. Other side. It was not a pleasant experience to be far from the Shivtekah, the tribes of God, from the great ones of the generation, from Levi, authoritative teachers of Israel, of Yoru Mishpatecha LeYaakov, from Yehuda, the leaders of the generation who were the true providers, who concerned themselves with the communal needs, and whose words were like those of the prophetic Urim of the high priest in all political and social questions. Binyamin, and he goes on and on, a little further down, about 57% of the way down the page. To be separated from his outstanding brothers, ostracized as it were, not only by part of the Sanhedrin, but by the majority of them, was a tragedy for Yosef. They drove Yosef from the Shtiblach, forced him out of the Rabbanus, and expelled him from the society of Torah scholars. They humiliated him everywhere. The tragedy above all lay in the fact that the controversy between the Yosef of 5662 and his brothers was in truth based on a misunderstanding, just as the ancient controversy between the first Yosef, the son of Yaakov, and his brothers was a result of they saw him from far off. This was a big misunderstanding. What does that mean? Next column. What did Yosef seek? To what did he aspire? What foreboding troubled him? Meaning, why did he have strange dreams? Why was he dreaming about sheaves? Why was he dreaming about the sun and the stars and the moon? What's going on? He says, the answer is, an obscure feeling of insecurity frightened him. What were the elements of this insecurity? The biblical Yosef was not persuaded that Vayishkon Yisrael Vayish, or in this case it's Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, but you could also have quoted the pasuk Vayishkon Yisrael Betach Batad En Yaakov. The words, for your seed shall be a stranger in an alien land, kept tolling in his ears. He saw himself and his brothers in an alien environment, far from the land of Canaan, in new circumstances and under new conditions of life. And he saw in his dream, he saw, behold, we are binding sheaves, and in the land of Egypt we can no longer be shepherds. Further, the sons, three lines later, the sons of Yaakov have to learn new occupations, such as farming, building, stone cutting, woodwork, and becoming skilled in gold, silver, and brass, which are adapted to the new conditions. Basically, he dreamt of a new framework within the unity of the family could be preserved even in the far places where the creator of the universe would scatter them. His constant preoccupation was the continuation of Avraham's tradition amidst a new economic structure and civilization. So Yosef dreamed of something different. He challenged the status quo and said, I have this feeling that something is going to change. That change is going to mean, in this context, it's going to mean moving to Egypt, leaving our homeland, and setting up a whole new type of society for ourselves. But the brothers didn't see that. The brothers considered this dangerous and threatening. So Rav Soloveitchik, and I wouldn't have the audacity, the temerity, the gall, pick your adjective, to make this kind of bold statement, but he says, that is the precursor to the Yosef of 1902. A movement which is obviously under excessive anti-Jewish persecution in Eastern Europe. It's not like they were living the good life in Israel, but from a religious standpoint, it was a firmly ensconced tradition of Torah communities in many places. Not that there wasn't inroads from the Haskalah, from the Enlightenment in many places, but Be'ikaron, if you were, you know, firmly rooted in the bastion of a Torah community, that's the way it was. And that's the way it had been for hundreds of years, back to the Vad Arba Aratzos. You know, you're talking hundreds of years of well-established Jewish communities, many of them had autonomy at certain periods of history. And now someone comes along and said, there's going to be a change. We need to change. We need to give it up. We need to move somewhere else. We need to do something different. Now, in this case, the change was actually going back to Israel, which itself is obviously a universally accepted Torah principle by all Jews, but it meant other things as well. And this disconnect created a tension. So I bring this piece up as we talk about religious Zionism. Of course, we should really devote a whole year. You could talk about Torah of Eretz Yisrael and religious Zionism, what that means. But the reason why it's important to note is because we've been talking about what it means to have a particular Masorah, a tradition. And what does it mean to have a Masorah means that we need to think about the fact that our Masorah is distinct from others and that that's okay. And not only that, by framing it in this way, what Rav Soloveitchik is telling us is that, you know what, even though in other areas of life, in other areas of halacha, there's something called azlinan basarov, you follow the majority, or bitul barov, you nullify the minority. If you have a case, for example, of Sanhedrin, you have 23 judges, and they have a majority, a significant majority, it can't just be one, to put somebody to death, a capital case. You have a significant majority, 13 rules in one direction, l'chayev, and 10 rules, l'zakai. It's bitul. The miyut is command alesa, according to the rabbinic jargon. They don't exist anymore. It is now a unanimous ruling that all 23 judges sign off on, and that's it. There's bittul of the miut. That's when you have an amida l'minyan in a Sanhedrin. That's what Tosis points out in Bava Kamma. And similarly, many of us have this experience in a kitchen setting. There's a different kind of bittul barov. There it could be, you know, if you have kosher chicken soup and a little bit of non-kosher chicken soup got spilled in. So we have a principle called bittul b'shishim. But bittul b'shishim, when you have two chicken soups, that's really drabanan. Min ha-Torah, bittul barov would be adequate. But Rav Soloveitchik is saying is that when it comes to a Masorah of your Shevet, of your tradition, of your Rabbanim, there's no such thing as Bittul Barov. It doesn't matter how many other tribes have subscribed to a different approach. We have our approach. And we need to celebrate it, and we need to educate about it, and we need to dig deeply to understand it. We need to take it seriously. Yes, I'm going to just get this door.
So on the one hand, you say, okay, you got to hold by a Masorah. On the other hand, it seems like Soloveitchik is saying that there's a revolution term anyway, times when you have to pivot to a new direction. So how do you know when that's right and when that's wrong?
Great question. So that's why we have great Torah leaders in every generation to whom we look for direction. And there has always been a partnership between the rabbinic leadership who provide guidance and the community who work together with that rabbinic leadership. In a halakhic context, it's true also. The Gemara has the principle, and it's codified by the Rambam. Let's say the Beis Din HaGadol, the great Beis Din, decides they want to establish a gzeira, a decree. And for those who remember way back at the beginning of the year when we talked about the five components of the oral tradition, one of them is, the ability for the sages to enact decrees. So the Gemara Baba Basra talks about, well, they had an idea that we're going to make a decree after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There was a small group of people. They said, you know, we should have a decree that no one should eat fleishigs after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, because if you don't have karbanos, so we're going to sit home and grill on a Sunday afternoon for dinner, we're going to grill Romanian hot dogs, and the Rabbonu Shalom's house where the karbanos is destroyed. It's not right. And other kinds of gzeiros like that. And then in those conversations, when you talk about certain kinds of gzeiros, they have a phrase. You know, the phrase is called a gzeira she'ein hatzibur yecholim la'amod bo. It's a gzeira, it's a decree that the people, they can't hack it. It's not appropriate. It doesn't work in the community that we're dealing with. In the context of the reality of the people, not the rabbis, maybe the five rabbis who thought of the idea could hack it, but it doesn't fit. It's not appropriate It's not going to, people aren't going to adjust to that. So the Rambam says, not only are they enjoined from not saying that decree, from not making that decree, even if the rabbis were to pronounce that decree, it would be batel. It would be automatically invalidated because it's not appropriate for the community. So it's a partnership. So every community, you know, you have Hasidic communities who follow their specific Hasidic leaders. Then you have Lithuanian communities, you have Sephardic communities. Within the Sephardic communities, you have, you know, the Ben Ishchai side, and you have like every community, and we have our tradition and our rabbis that we look to. And so we have to remember, we're not looking for a question of numbers. And sometimes that's something we have to get used to, which is, it's not always Acharei Rabim Lahatos. It doesn't mean you always have to go after the majority. Maybe the majority of the Jewish people, or even the majority of the Torah community, has one perspective. But that doesn't mean that's everyone's perspective. Rav Schechter likes to quote that there were 13 gates, Sha'arim of Yerushalayim. Why were the 13 gates of Yerushalayim? So there was a Chabad Siddur with a very old Chabad Siddur, Nusach HaRi Siddur, with an introduction called the Shar HaKolo, where he points out, yeah, that's because there were 13 gates of prayer, 13 gates of approaching God. So if you were one of the tribes, so your tribe would go in this gate. Imagine you drive up to Yerushalayim, you would know which gate is your family. You go in your why do you have a 13th? Take a guess.
For everybody else. There's always people that don't fit in.
That's right. Converts, you don't know where your family is. This has what's called the Shar HaKolel. That's the catch-all. So that's why they say in the Siddur, well, if you don't know what shevet you're from, you know you should daven the Nusach that's Kolel everybody. Who's that? Nusach HaRi. So that's why they make a pitch for the Lubavitch Nusach. It's called Nusach HaRi. But the idea is that every shevet has its approach. And so we too have our approach. So religious Zionism, our Masorah, the values that we've been talking about are significant, says Rav Soloveitchik, irrespective of whether they are the majority or the minority. We have a Masorah. So now, what is the Masorah that he's specifically alluding to? So he's speaking at a Mizrahi convention, and if you look on the white page, all right, maybe it's not the largest type. Oh, please. It's okay. Should Hana hand out monocles to go with this. But I got this from Rabbi Jacob J. Schachter, who sent it to me. This is from an old Sefer of the Mizrahi, where they published in memorial of Rabbi Yitzchak Yaakov Reines, who was the founder of the Mizrahi. And this is the Kol Kore that Rav Reines published in 1902, announcing the Mizrahi. He describes that he gathered together a group of people in Vilna, and he tells you the dates. It was a Tuesday and a Wednesday in March of 1902. It was March 4th and March 5th, 1902. They got a group of people together in Vilna, and then a couple of weeks later, they sent out this Kol Kore. And they sent it around. And this was the founding of the Mizrahi. The Mizrahi, the word Mizrahi means what? Stands for?
East.
Right? Literally means east, but it's a contraction for Merkaz Ruchani. That's why it's called Mizrahi. Merkaz Ruchani. A spiritual center. What is this all about? And why is it unique to our Masorah? Why was it so controversial? So, the top of the Kol Kore talks about how, remember, the year is 1902. So he says,
wasn't there a big massacre in 1902 or a blood libel or something? In
Kishinev was 1905. 1903. I think it was 1903 or 1905. But every week there was another pogrom. Don't worry. You're right. I just don't know the one that you're referring to. So more than 20 years, Rav Reines says, more than 20 years ago, people really started taking the concept of Zionism seriously. You know, it happens to be that many more than 20 years ago, in the middle of the 19th century, there were several rabbanim who were very interested in this idea. It was almost a pre-Zionist You know, the rabbinic idea of coming back to Yerushalayim, building karbonos, bringing karbonos, building a Beis HaMikdash type of question, is Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, Rav Alkalai, but that's not for today. So I want to focus today specifically on the Mizrahi. So he says, more than 20 years ago, people started this movement and the interest in coming back to Israel. And second line, Harayon, She'anu korim lo kayom tzionut. The idea that we call today Zionism. He says more than 20 years ago, it's kind of whipped up this concept. He says, however, what we found is that there are lots of different people who are involved in this, some of whom share our Torah values. Rav Reines learned in Volozhin. And then there are others who aren't. So you know what we should do? We decided we're going to get together a conference of people, and we're going to talk about what Zionism is and what it means to us as a Torah community. Let's analyze it, let's discuss it, and let's come up with a plan. So he says, on the bottom, if you see on the bottom, you see, he gives you the dates. Ir Vilna, bottom of the right-hand column. He says, after we realize that there's a lot of confusion about Zionism, there are lots of people who are Torah observant, there are lots of other people. So he says, let's get together in Tair. Where do they get together? You see on the bottom? Yeah. Ir Vilna. On Chaf He Chaf of Adar Rishon Tafrei Samach Beis, March 4th and 5th, 1902. And among them, there are Anshei Mada, you know, social critics, political scientists, Rabbanim, Levarer, top of the next column, Levarer as Devar HaTzionus. Let's figure out, what is Zionism? Mahi al da'atam. Let's figure out, Lahafrid bo esmina mitoch she'ina mina. Let's figure out from what is the min and what's not. So he says, we figured out what we think Zionism boils down to. So they give you four ha'aris. Number one, Aleph. If you're not following inside, I'm just going to read it out. Don't worry. It's about six lines in Aleph. Is asufos anoshim v'noshim yachad bekama kinufios shel hatzirim sheshem tzion nikra aleim. Zionism, number one, means a group of young people, men and women, who get together and call themselves Zionim, Zionists. That's number one. That's what he says. The first thing we ascertain. Number two, Beis. Chelek hasifrus, part of the literature that was created and fashioned by de shochare hakultura hachadasha, that is evolving through the new culture that is involved with Zionism, includes an ideas and says to establish it al shitas tarbut chitzona she'en ruach toraseinu v'ruach moraseinu yecholo b'shum ponim lios nocha himeno. It includes a cultural ideal which is an anathema to our Torah. There are, that is one aspect of Zionism. Number three, hachinuch hamesukan. He says the education that is established al pi ruach chelek hasifrus hazos, that is established by part of this secular, anti-religious Zionist thinking, what does it do? It creates a program, ho'oseis yedias haloshon v'historia ikar ves limon ha-Torah rak letofel kal. It makes learning language and history the main part of education, and the Torah is just kind of like a by-the-by. So that's our third observation. And number four, the next section, a few lines down. Ha mitifim shaf bavada yeshbem anash misharim. Those who are mitifim, lahatif means to pour. What does that mean? It means the people who are the spokesmen, the representatives of this Zionist group. Who are they? He says, there are definitely those who are upright and straight, but there are those who speak falsehood, anti-Torah ideology. So he says, what do we think? He says, this is how we capture the movement of Zionism today. He says, the truth is, It's about halfway down. Be'emes ein l'kol ha'dvarim ha'elu ha'muvoyim min ha'chutz shum yachas v'zikos shol mamis mamish la'amitas etzem ha'tzionut. He says the truth is all of these phenomena that we see and that we identify with Zionism really have nothing to do with Zionism per se. What is Zionism really? The desire to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Really, it's about coming back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It really is noveya from our neshamas. Happens to be there's a lot of this other stuff that we see in Zionists, but that's not really what Zionism is. So you know what we need to do? We need to establish, he says, therefore, it must be, we need to remind everybody what the core of Zionism really is about, and we're going to establish. We got together at the end in Vilna and we said, Merkaz Ruchani B'Shem Mizrahi, to get together and organize this group called the Mizrahi. And what are we going to do? I probably should have put these in the underline in yours. Go down six lines. This Mizrahi is going to have two areas of focus. One is called the Chelek HaGuf, and the other one is called L'Chelek HaRuach. We are going to have joint operations and foci and activities. We're going to focus on multiple areas working within Zionism. One is the Chelek HaGuf, the physical building. What did they have? The blue, like blue pushkalach. We're going to do the Chelek HaGuf, the physical, and we're going to do the Chelek HaRuach. So what do we need to do to accomplish these things? So he says we're going to have several components of our platform. So number one, you see where there's an aleph about 12 lines up from the bottom? So let's talk about the Chelek HaGuf. He says, number one, L'guf ha'yishuv ein l'shum echad mehem lehiporeid minu agudos hakayamos. Number one, when it comes to building the guf, the land, we are not going to separate ourselves out from the already existing institutions. You know, the Keren Kayemet, he says, Af al pi, even though yesh b'sof gam anashim sheinam maskimim mam b'dvarim shebeleiv, even though we don't agree with, say, the Keren Kayemet in certain respects, a lot of religious issues, but for the purpose of building the land, we got to work together. We don't agree on all the things in terms of the Ruach, but in terms of the Gashmias, the Pushkas, the building the land, the planting the trees, we're together. That's number one. That's element of our program. Turn the page over. Number two. Kishem shelakol davar. Shebemamon v'shebeiske hachol. Just like in all of the monetary issues and the physical, secular issues of Tzionut, anu mishtatvim im shara tzionim, sach anu miskansim kinus miyucha la'atzmenu l'kol advarm ha'mesurim b'leiv. Ein anu, why? Because ein anu, ein anachnu motziim ma'oz acher l'torosinu shetiskayim. He says, even though we're going to work with them on all of the financial issues, we're going to have our own kenes for spiritual values. Because our values have to drive our mission. And even though we are shared in terms of the actual physical building land, we have to have our own identity. And that needs to be shaped by its own Mizrahi conventions, its own Mizrahi set of values. And that's the Ruach. Go down 10 lines. The first, you see there's a little gimel. His third point. Legadel Banenu L'Torah L'Masim Tovim, to educate our children according to Torah, so that the Torah is the main thing, and then to include within that the context, within that context, the appropriate other components of learning. Educational systems. That's why today, you know, Amit, Emuna, all these are all, I don't know exactly how they're affiliated with Mizrahi. If my grandmother was here, I would ask her, because she was, both of my grandmothers, they were all involved in these things, because this was a way, what does it have to anything to do with Zionism? Because they wanted to establish educational institutions. That comes from the original Mizrahi platform, to have educational institutions, because if we don't teach our children these values, so then they're going to disappear. And then the last point, because we're running late on time. Go 8 lines up from the bottom of the first column on the second side. Ha'agudos ha'nichnasos ba'organization shalanu yismuchu ach b'yedei ha'darshanim shi'atifu b'ruach toraseinu. We're going to have spokespeople. We're going to have leaders. We're going to have darshanim. They have to be, what do you call in Yiddish, meins, from our types of people. If people are going to speak for our movement, they have to be Torah living personalities. So what Rav Reines is setting out here is this very interesting, complex vision. That on the one hand, when it comes to building the land of Israel and the trees and the pushkas, we're going to work with secular Zionists. But when it comes to values and identity and education and spokespeople, we need to create a community of people that has our spiritual values. And he says, for that, we're going to create the Mizrahi.
When was this written?
1902. This is published in March, late March 1902.
So the regular Mizrahi, if I could call it something, what was it called? Just Mizrahi?
So there were, no, this is the founding of Mizrahi.
All right, but before, so he obviously, this is an answer to something that was going on.
So it was either the Chov of Eitz Zion.
But what year, when did that start?
Chov Eitz Zion, what year? Something like that, yeah.
The Basel Conference, when all this was presented, was just in 1896-97.
That's right.
It's natural that he should be talking about this now. Yes. The time frame is natural.
So at the Basel Conference, at the first Zionist Conference, they had a letter. They received a letter that was read from a very important, prominent Rav, who was also a religious Zionist personality, is Rav Moliver, Rav Shmuel Moliver, and he kind of articulated some of these ideas. But what's happening is now that we have a formal Zionist Congress, so that Zionist Congress has all these representatives. So at part of this, they describe that they're going to send representatives. We're going to have some influence. You're not going to have any influence. You don't have a seat at the table. But we, he says, we're going to have a seat at the table coming with a very specific ideology. Now that tradition, that Masorah, is not going to be, you know, judged now in retrospect. Mizrahi is over 100 years old. You know, it's not for us to discuss. This is a shir. It's not a historical conference about the success of the Mizrahi as a movement. Rav Kook himself actually had a complex relationship with the Mizrahi, and at a certain point later in life tried to start his own movement called Degel Yerushalayim, different than the Mizrahi. But the ideal is what is of interest to me. Because this idea of a movement has a lot of the elements that we had related to in terms of human initiative. So obviously this is actually taking action to build the land. In terms of the relationship between Kodesh and Chol, and most directly, the idea of nuance of how it relates to Jews who don't share our worldview. Because the other way to look at this, which appears in the letter that you have here on the bottom of the page, this letter from Chaim Brisker was published in Warsaw in 1899 in a country called Or LeYesharim from this Rav Yaakov Moshe Karpas, who went around Eastern Europe asking rabbis for anti-Zionist letters that he could publish. That was his work in life. So, and he got quite a few very prominent and important letters. One of them is from the Gaon Rav Chaim HaLevi Soloveitchik. And Rav Chaim writes this letter, and what's the crux of his letter? He says, look, you want to talk about Zionim? You want to talk about Zionists? Many of these people who are known, v'tachlisam, in the top underline, kfar hodiu, pirsimu ki ul'akar yisori adas, they want to undo, to uproot the fundamentals of our traditional observance connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How is it possible that anybody could work with them?
Seems like he's just talking to secular ones.
Yes. So he's saying... He's
putting everybody in...
No, he's saying because there are secular Zionists, right, so we can't work with them. If they are motivated by a secular ideology and they are, you know, not Shomer Torah mitzvos, so he says, this is their goal in settling the land, he's shocked. He says, Lo Yu'uman, in the next underline, Lo Yu'uman ki yisupar. Nobody could even believe. Ki achare yizgalu zodan libam epi atzmam o yimzu mei ha'yisharim libosim sheyischabru lohem? Would you be mischaber Al Tischab and the Russia. You can't work with them. You can't go to their conferences. You can't have anything to do with them. So these are two different shitas among the tribes of Israel. You have those who say, if they are secular, if they're anti-Torah, you can't have anything to do with them. And then there are others, and it doesn't matter whether they're in the majority or the minority, they are Baalei Samcha, great Torah giants in their own right, who said, we can't work with them. It doesn't mean we sell our soul to secular Zionism, and it doesn't mean that we agree when people do things that cross our values. Right? You know, and everybody will tell you lots of stories about cutting payas and throwing away tefillin, all these Rahman al-Itzlan, tragic episodes. No one's denying that. No one's condoning that. It's just saying what Rav Reiner says, that this view, this religious Zionist view, says that there's nuance. It's not black or white. Yeah.
Was this Rav Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik related to Yosef Soloveitchik?
It was the grandfather.
So we have such diametrically opposing views.
You got it. So Rav Soloveitchik, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, when he was a younger person in the 1930s, he was not only a member of the Aguda, but you could argue he was the rising star for the Aguda. In 1940, just before the Nazis marched into Vilna, was the passing of Rav Chaim Ozer Grzesinski. Rav Chaim Ozer was the undisputed Gadol Hador, previously the other great rabbinic authority in Vilna, in Lithuania, the Kovna Rav of Avram Dov Ber Kahana, had died. And after the Chafetz Chaim's passing in 1933, everybody knew Rav Chaim Ozer was the Gadol Hador. So he was the Gadol Hador, and the Aguda was going to have a convention. So the Aguda convention was going to take place in Cincinnati, which is not so shocking because Reb Lazer Silver was the Rav in Cincinnati, and he was maybe one of the most influential senior Rabbanim in America. He was very influential for those who are familiar with his work in trying to support the victims of the Holocaust in the DP camps. He did amazing, amazing things. So Reb Lazer Silver lived in Cincinnati, which is probably why, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that's why the conference was there. Who would the Aguda invite to be maspid, to eulogize the Gadol Hador, Reb Chaim Ozer, who had passed away in Vilna? You know who they invited? A young man, not even 40 years old, by the name of Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, Yosheber. The Rav was Maspid Reb Chaim Ozer in a very well-known Hesped that was published in Hapardes. And then he changed. He moved. He left the Aguda community and he became the honorary president of the Mizrahi. Now, that does not mean that Rav Soloveitchik agreed with every political position or every decision that the Mizrahi as a political organ made. But this was his articulation. It's very interesting. So it goes back to the same core value in talking about nuance and black and white and relationship between Kodesh and Chol, which is what I want to get to now without running out of too much time. Yes?
Is it so different than what we see today in terms of recognizing Israel, Yom HaTzmaut, you know, other holidays, that you know,
it is exactly the same thing, and that's why we're talking about it, because we see these machloks in exactly. Wow. That's exactly why we're having this conversation, because what we're showing is that the old differences between the brothers of Yosef and the Rabbanim of the end of the 19th century going into the 20th century, and now in the 21st century, we see the same motif. We see the same concept continuing. And what I like to appreciate is that what Rav Soloveitchik said is what it was, that Vayaro Somei Rachok, that this dispute was because they saw each other from afar. And I can speak from personal experience, having grown up in a shtiebel where the Rebbe of our shtiebel was a Holocaust survivor in the Satmar community, and most of my mother's family is from the Telz community, and my father's family mostly from the religious Zionist community, is that when you get to know people personally, you usually don't throw them in the pit. Even when you disagree vehemently, even when you disagree sharply ideologically. So, you know, obviously, Rav Soloveitchik and we are not in a position to criticize the Avos, and that's not the point of this year, and it's not to discuss, you know, they had very significant disputes, and for important. These are the Shem Shemayim arguments. But part of it is, I think it's two components. Part of it is us understanding where our Masorah comes from so that we can be proud of it and we can educate our community about it and use that as a vehicle to grow closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then when we have a healthy self-esteem, because, you know, oftentimes people get into fights because they have low self-esteem. When we have a healthy self-esteem that we come from a Masorah and our Rabbanim, so then we can engage people in different communities and get to know them and to be in conversation with them and respect them. Because you know what? The other Shvatim, they also had a Deya. And who was right and who was wrong? That's a very difficult thing to judge. Because maybe you could argue, as Rav Soloveitchik does, that Yosef was right. Because they did go down to Egypt and he saved their lives. But ultimately, as we know from other sources, there's a tradition. There are going to be two Mashiachs. There's Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David, which we're going to get to in a second, which we'll talk about. But Mashiach ben Yosef doesn't survive.
But it really wasn't Yosef's decision.
Of course,
decision for him.
Right. So, there's an element of hashgacha that the Ribbono Shel Olam is putting Kilam Michyash Lachani Elokim Lifneichem. The Ribbono Shel Olam put him there, but that's mochiach a certain thing that there is a place and there is a time for that vision, for that dream of the sheaves and the stars, which Rav Soloveitchik refers to economics and to technology. There is a place for that. That goes on in a debate today. Is it black and white about technology and economy, or is it more nuanced? It's dangerous. The brother said to Yosef, that sounds like a dangerous proposition. We're going to go to Egypt? That's mamish like the filth of the filth. Right? Just transpose what's happening today in many places, what people have is going on in the world. Mamash, the filth of the filth. So when Yaakov saw Yosef, he said, Ha'od, when they says, Od Yosef, Rav, Od Yosef ben Chai. He says, it's not a chiddush that his son is still alive. It's a chiddush that his son lives in Egypt with a smartphone and he's still frum. And he still has a connection to the Ribbono Shel Olam. He still loves Yiddishkeit. He still loves learning. He's still passionate about Hashem Yisbarach. That was a chiddush. So that's a big challenge. And if we go this route of Yosef without being clear about the potential pitfalls and setting up the ruach side, so then you turn around. You're going to see, God forbid, people are just going to, you know, I'm not a social critic. I'm not a demographer, but it's a challenge. So we overstayed our welcome in Rav Soloveitchik. Let's get to Rav Kook in the following shorthand. So now, we have identified that a big piece of this conversation about religious Zionism and understanding our Masorah and our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this context comes through a nuanced approach to dealing with secular Zionists, but it also has to do with the other issue that we had mentioned in the past about the relationship between Kodesh and Chol. But the third issue that we identified about human activism, that we actually mentioned way back when, was the way Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha, referred to Rav Soloveitchik in terms of religious Zionism. We're not going to chazer that today, but that also has a part to play in this. But now let's go to two pieces of Rav Kook. We're not going to go through them inside for time. One appears on the green sheet called Ikvasa de Mashicha from Chazon HaGeula, where Rav Kook, here's more of somebody, I don't know if everybody has. Yeah. Where Rav Kook is writing about the Seder of the Geula, the steps. Seder HaGeula U'Tchiyas Ha'uma Be'eretz Yisrael, they follow the Pasuk V'Zarasi Es Beis Yisrael V'Es Beis Yehuda Zera Adam V'Zera Behema. Zera Adam L'Chud V'Zera Behema L'Chud. That there are two components of Shlemus, of wholeness. There is HaNefashos HaNotos L'Binyan Masi, and those Anoshim Bale Nefashos HaAtzilios. There are people, and this is where the transition comes, there are people whose essence is one that relates to the practical building, the Binyan HaMa'asi. And then there are people whose essence relates to the Ruach. Rav Kook now is telling us, number one, a big chiddush. It's a novel interpretation. It's a novel insight. Not everybody, even in a religious Zionist philosophy, agrees to this fully. But the second thing is that he is, in a certain way, taking the machlokas that we had about how to view secular Zionists, you know, work with them or don't work with them, nuance or black and white, and saying, well, wait a second, those people, those secular Zionists, we can actually now view them in a different light, because what we can say is that maybe that's, in a certain sense, that's their teva. That's their nature. That's what they're inclined to. Now, it doesn't mean that's the ideal. People who are inclined to physical building, to politics, and to economics, of course that could be in the context of an observant life, of bringing all of those kochos to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But if it's not, Rav Kook says, you don't have to throw it away. Because even that can play a role in the development of a holistic, of shleimus, of an integrated Torah life. Torah life meaning not just on a personal level, but on a national level, on an identity level. He says you actually need people who are going to run the business side of things and people who are going to run the ruach side of things. They need to work together, but it's not just that, okay, Rav Chisidish, not just, we're going to hold our nose, and we know those guys have pushkas, and we can't, it's not effective to start our own thing, so we're going to work with their pushkas, and we'll, no, it's more than that. It's looking at those guys with the secular pushkas and saying, well, what they're doing is a binyan hamasi. We can infuse that with ruach and bring something that's a davar shalem. It's kind of like Yisachar Zvulun, kind of. But what it does is it actually almost sanctifies these secular people.
So what they do is also important.
That's right. And it doesn't, again, clearly, it does not excuse somebody from not fulfilling the vision and the mission that their neshama has inside them. But it doesn't totally dismiss them. It actually finds the value in those people. Someone sent me recently, I could send it to you, a picture, a fantastic picture. It's, if you take a step back, it's a fur hat in a sea of little kashketlach. It's a picture of, a rare picture, I had not seen it before, someone found on the internet and sent it to me. It's a picture of Rav Kook, you know, he wore a spodek from his upbringing, and his beard, and he's standing in some moshava somewhere in the north. Must be some, you know, one of these settlements, with standing among a group of not religious farmers. You know, they had their little caps. You could see there was the, no, they were wearing like katzketlach, like the Kangol caps. Like these, you see, they're the working class folks. And that image of Rav Kook standing among the working class people, the farmers, that's really the image that he's trying to project here. He's trying to say, those people, I could see the beauty in them. I could see the value in them. They may not believe yet, but don't throw them away, and we're going to work with them because we believe that together we can create something that's Davar Shalem, and maybe we can be Mashpia on them. It goes back to the same philosophy that the Mizrahi said. We're going to have a seat at the table because we can be Mashpia on them. And this will conclude with this last piece, which we don't have time to develop totally. But here you are in 1904. Hamispid Birushalayim. And this got Rav Kook, as you know, into a lot of high savasar, as you say in Yiddish. A lot of hot water. Because Herzl dies. Herzl is the epitome of secular Zionism. Right? You go to the Knesset, and there's one picture in the Knesset, the chamber of the Knesset. There's one picture on the wall. Uncle Ted. That's it. Theodore Herzl. That's it. Nobody else.
Theodore Herzl, he is the exponent and maybe the original prophet of secular Zionism and the organizer of secular Zionism. So he dies, and Rav Kook delivers a eulogy, the Misbeid B'Yerushalayim, the Hesped, for Theodore Herzl. Rav Kook had just arrived, by this time, arrived in Israel, in Yafo. And this, you know, this newly arrived rabbi is creating a lot of waves with this Hesped. And part of the reason that this Hesped creates such a stir is because he invokes a Gemara, a tradition, a Gemara in Sukkah, which is later picked up by, especially in Kabbalistic teachings, about two Mashiachs, Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. And in the context of this idea of these two Mashiachs, he seems to say, he doesn't say it explicitly, but he seems to say that Theodore Herzl is a Mashiach. Now, I could tell you that when I say Ani Mamin Bevias HaMashiach, I don't envision, I mean, maybe the Mashiach has a beard like Herzl, but he doesn't have the life of Herzl. That's not what we think of when we think about Mashiach ben David. Rav Kook says, ugh, you don't understand what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about Mashiach ben David. I'm not talking about the spiritual guide. I'm talking about something else. Two tchunos. Look to the third paragraph. Lama anu tzrichim l'shnei mashichim. Why do we need two Mashiachs? Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. Hare hatachlis hamuchuvenu shenasi ye'echad ye'elache l'kulam. Va'av the David avdi nasi lahem li'olam. Obviously, our goal is that there should be a unified, integrated, single leader of Avdi David. Omnam ke shem sheyotzar Hashem yizbarach ba'adam haguf v'haneshama. Just like in a person, the Ribbono Shel Olam created a guf and a neshama, a physical and a spiritual. And opposite that, he says, l'umasam hakochos, the energies, hanotim lahachzik kiyom haguf al-mechon l'shachlo, v'chein hakochos hamachzik in koach ha-neshama. There are the components of our identity that relate to sustaining our physical, breakfast, lunch, dinner, all the basic things that we need to do to function physically, and then there are those that relate to our spiritual, our noble values, love, aspiration, coming close to our soul, reaching out to Hashem Yisbarach. Just like a person is a composite of those two elements and ideals, so too the nation is as well. The nation has people and energies and aspects that relate to the binyan of the physical. Mashiach ben Yosef. Yosef was the economic, social engineer of Egypt. He built the physical. And then Ves Yehuda Shalach Lefanav, Lahoris Lefanav Goshna. Yehuda is going to add the spiritual dimension. There are those in the world who their Masorah is to look at the chelik of the guf, of the body, and be mavatalit, and say that it's chol and it's not worthy. It's a bidyevit, it's a concession. And that is one tradition. It relates to what we talked about last week in terms of leisure. There are those who view that as something negative, as distracting from your neshama. It's the chelik, the tension that exists between the chelik haguf and the chelik haneshama is a real tension. So some say, you know how to resolve that tension? Try to diminish as much as possible the chelik haguf, the material. Try to, you know, it's concession at best if you maintain it. But the best thing is to try to move exclusively in the direction and the domain of the neshama. But then there's another approach. What Rav Kook is saying, and by the way, it's not shocking that Rav Kook wears a spodik. Why do I say that? Because this theme has a lot in common with teachings and themes that we know from the world of Hasidus. That doesn't shun the chelek haguf. That says, rather, what you do is you integrate the guf and the neshama. You use the guf in the service of the neshama. By eating a healthy breakfast, you propel yourself forward. You're in your avodas Hashem. Not just because you make brachas and you have kavana that it should, you know, sustain you, that you shouldn't fall asleep in the shiur or whatever, you know. But that's part of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu made us. So it's not a concession, it's part of the ideal. Says Rav Kook, that's what we're looking at on a national level. That of course, ultimately, it's all the sach gain olam amalchus shakai. It's all to bring the Ribbono Shel Olam into all aspects of life. But what our Mesorah is saying is that to do that, we don't have to negate the guf. Even if it's unredeemed, even if it's unrefined, we can include it in the process. Don't take it halfway. Just like you wouldn't eat a piece of pizza that was in the oven for 3 minutes because it's raw. But that doesn't mean that you can't start the pizza with raw dough. You start it with something that has chomer, and you add the tzura. Maybe the pizza's not the best mashal, but the idea that we, in our community, we follow this ideal, it's a complex one, of saying we can create nuance. We can look at these people and these ideas and this aspect of the chomer and the guf and the secular world, maintain our identity, our values, our kibbutz for aspiring to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and without sacrificing that, work hand in hand to build the Olam HaMasi, hopefully with the ultimate aim of coming together to see them also appreciate the Torah that we think is the center of our lives. Shkoyach. Yes, it's not exactly. It's not coincidental. It's interesting. Yes, there are those who suggest it's an interesting observation that maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam made it bedafka that it was started by the secular. Right. Others would argue no, it's because we, the religious, didn't do enough in the beginning to be a partner. But it's interesting.